This is part two of a new speech by Al Gore given at the NSU School of Law, September the 18th, 2006, titled Solving the Climate Crisis.
Our current ridiculous dependence on oil endangers not only our national security, but also our economic security. Anyone who believes that the international market for oil is a free market is seriously deluded. It does have many characteristics of a free market. And there are periods, extended periods, when supply and demand are in sufficient balance that it operates somewhat like a free market. But there are also periods when it is subject to manipulation by a small group of nations controlling the largest recoverable reserves, sometimes in concert with companies that have great influence over the global production, refining, and distribution network. We heard statements 2 weeks ago from both of those sources about their view that there should be dramatic increases in production in order to bring prices down because of conditions in the market. And lo and behold, that happened. It's extremely important for us to be clear among ourselves that these periodic efforts to manipulate price and supply have not one objective, but two. Naturally, they seek to maximize profits, but even more significantly, they seek to manipulate our political will. Every time we come close to recognizing the wisdom of developing our own independent sources of renewable fuels, they seek to dissipate our sense of urgency and derail our effort to become less dependent on them. That is exactly what is happening at this very moment. Shifting to a greater reliance on ethanol, cellulosic ethanol, butanol, and green diesel fuels will not only reduce global warming pollution and enhance our national security and economic security, it will also reverse the steady loss of jobs and income in rural America. Several important building blocks for our solutions to the climate crisis can be found in new approaches to agriculture. As pointed out by the 25 by 25 movement, aimed at securing 25% of America's power and transportation fuels from agricultural sources by the year 2025, we can revitalize the farm economy by shifting its mission from a focus on a traditional focus on food, feed, and fiber to a focus on food, feed, fiber, fuel, and ecosystem services. We can restore the health of depleted soils by encouraging and rewarding the growing of fuel source crops like switchgrass and sawgrass using no-till cultivation, scientific crop rotation. We should reward farmers for planting more trees and sequestering more carbon and recognize the economic value of their stewardship of resources that are important to the health of the ecosystems that support our lives. Similarly, we should take bold steps to stop deforestation wherever we can and extend the harvest cycle on timber to optimize the carbon sequestration that's most powerful and most efficient with the older trees. Here's why. On a worldwide basis, every year, roughly 10 trillion tons of CO2 are put into the Earth's atmosphere. 2.5 trillion of those 10 trillion tons come from burning forests. So better management and protection of forests is clearly one of the single most important parts of any solution strategy for solving the climate crisis. Biomass, whether in the form of trees or switchgrass or other sources, is one of the most important forms of renewable energy. And renewable sources make up one of the most promising building blocks for solving the climate crisis. Wind energy, of course, is already fully competitive as a mainstream source of electricity and continues to grow in prominence and profitability. Solar photovoltaic energy is, according to researchers I respect, much closer than ever to a cost-competitive breakthrough as new nanotechnologies are being applied to dramatically enhance the efficiency with which these cells produce electricity from sunlight. And as clever new designs for concentrating solar energy are used, with new approaches such as the Stirling engine that has caused some excitement, that can bring costs sharply down. Buildings have been routinely ignored by many, but buildings, both commercial and residential, represent in every nation a far larger source of global warming pollution than cars and trucks. But new architecture and design techniques are creating truly dramatic new savings and opportunities for huge reductions in energy use and, with it, reductions in global warming pollution. As an example of this potential, the American Institute of Architecture, and the National Conference of Mayors have endorsed the 2030 challenge, asking the global architecture and building community to immediately transform building design to require that all new buildings and developments be designed first to use one half of the fossil fuel energy they would typically consume with today's designs, and then to require that all new buildings be carbon neutral by 2030. Using no fossil fuels to operate. After an extensive study, they have found this is completely feasible. A professor at Oberlin College has just presided over the completion of a building there that is not only zero carbon, it actually produces 30% more energy than it consumes. Some other countries have already required a standard calling for zero carbon for new buildings as they are now constructed. The rapid urbanization of the world's population is leading to the prospective development and building of more new urban structures in the next 35 years than all of the ones that have been built in all prior human history. Hard to imagine. But this startling trend represents a tremendous opportunity for really sharp reductions in global warming pollution through the use of intelligent architecture and design and stringent carbon standards. Here in the U.S., the extra cost of efficiency improvements like thicker insulation, more efficient window coatings, and the like have traditionally been shunned by many builders and homebuyers alike for a simple reason. They add to the initial purchase price, even though these investments typically pay for themselves several times over within a few years by reducing the monthly and annual heating and cooling costs. And then the additional savings continue each month for the lifetime of the building. It should be possible to remove that purchase price barrier for these enhancements in American buildings through the use of innovative mortgage finance instruments that eliminate any additional increase in the purchase price by capturing the future income from the expected savings. We should create a carbon neutral mortgage association, Connie Mae, to market these new financial instruments and stimulate their use in the private sector. This new Connie Mae or CNMA could be a very valuable and powerful instrument for reducing global warming pollution from buildings. Now, many believe that a responsible approach to solving the climate crisis must involve a significant increase in the use of nuclear power plants. They believe that they are natural substitutes for coal-fired generators. While I am not opposed to nuclear power and do expect to see some modest increase use of nuclear reactors, I doubt that they will play a significant role in many countries as a new source of electricity. The main reason for my skepticism about nuclear power playing a much larger role is not the so much the problem of long-term waste disposal or the danger of reactor operator error or the vulnerability to terrorist attack. All of those problems are there, but let's assume for the moment that all three of those problems can be solved. That still leaves two serious issues that are more difficult constraints. The first is economics. The current generation of nuclear reactors is expensive, take a long time to build, and come only in one size, extra large. In a time of great uncertainty over energy prices, utilities must count on great uncertainty in projecting electricity demand. And that uncertainty itself causes them to strongly prefer smaller incremental additions to their generating capacity that are each less expensive and quicker to build than these large 1,000-megawatt light water nuclear reactors. Newer, more scalable, and affordable, and safer reactor designs may eventually become available, but not soon. And the second problem is that if the world as a whole chose nuclear power as the option of choice to replace coal-fired generating plants, we would face a dramatic increase in the likelihood of nuclear weapons proliferation. During my 8 years in the White House, every single nuclear weapons proliferation issue we dealt with was connected to a nuclear reactor program. Today, the dangerous weapons programs in both Iran and North Korea are linked to their civilian reactor programs. Moreover, proposals from the West to separate the ownership of reactors from the ownership of the fuel supply process have met with stiff resistance from developing countries who want reactors. As a result of all these problems, I believe that nuclear reactors will likely play only a limited role in the set of solutions we need. The most important set of problems, by far, that must be solved in charting solutions for the climate crisis have to do with coal. One of the dirtiest sources of energy, and one that produces far more CO2 for each unit of energy output than oil or gas, and yet a source that is found in abundance in our country, in China, in many places around the world. And because the pollution from the burning of coal is currently routinely excluded from the market calculations of what it is believed to cost, coal is presently seen as the cheapest source of abundant energy. And as a result of that and the growing demand for energy, coal's relative role is growing rapidly, day by day. Fortunately, there may be an affordable and effective way to capture the CO2 produced as coal is burned and sequester it safely to prevent it from adding to the climate crisis. It's not easy. And this technique, known as carbon capture and sequestration, is expensive. And most users of coal have resisted the investments necessary to employ this technique. However, when the cost of not using carbon capture and sequestration is calculated, it becomes obvious that this technique is destined to play a very significant and growing role as one of the major building blocks of our solutions to the climate crisis. Interestingly, the most advanced and environmentally responsible project currently in the world for capturing and sequestering CO2 is in one of the most forbidding locations for energy production anywhere on the planet, in the Norwegian portions of the North Sea. Norway, as it turns out, has hefty CO2 taxes, and even though there are many exceptions and exemptions, oil production is not one of the exemptions. And as a result, the oil producers have found it quite economical and profitable to develop and routinely use very advanced carbon capture and sequestration technologies to avoid the tax they would otherwise pay for the CO2 they would otherwise emit. The use of similar techniques could be required for coal-fired generating plants and can be used in combination with advanced approaches like integrated gasification combined cycle, the the technique that is the preferred pathway for the future for many coal users. Even with the most advanced techniques, however, the economics of carbon capture and sequestration will depend upon the availability of and proximity to safe, deep storage reservoirs. And we cannot afford to delude ourselves about the standards for safety and reliability of storage. Nevertheless, I believe that it is time to recognize that the phrase clean coal technology is devoid of meaning unless it means zero carbon emissions technology. That should be the standard for clean coal in the future. Carbon capture and sequestration is only one of many new technological approaches that will require a significant increase by governments and business in advanced research and development to speed the availability of more effective technologies to help us solve the climate crisis more quickly. But it is crucial to emphasize that even without brand new technologies, we already have now everything we need to get started on a solution to this crisis. I've often added, save perhaps political will, but as you know and as I have said, that is a renewable resource. But there is an important policy that can help us succeed. In a market economy like ours, every one of the solutions that I have discussed here today will be more effective and much easier to implement if we place a price on the CO2 pollution that is recognized in the marketplace. We need to summon the courage to use the right tools for this job. For the last 14 years, I have advocated and advocate today the elimination of all payroll taxes, including those for Social Security and unemployment compensation, and the replacement of all that revenue with pollution taxes, principally on CO2. The overall level of taxation would remain exactly the same. It would be, in other words, a revenue-neutral tax swap. But instead of discouraging businesses from hiring more employees, it would discourage businesses from producing more pollution. A good swap. Global warming pollution, indeed all pollution, is now described by economists as an externality. This absurd label means, in essence, we don't want to keep track of this stuff, so let's pretend it doesn't exist. And sure enough, when it's not recognized in the marketplace, it does make it much easier for government, business, and all the rest of us to pretend that it doesn't exist. But what we're pretending doesn't exist is the stuff that's destroying the habitability of the planet. We need to put a price on it. Presently, we are putting 70 million tons of that stuff into the atmosphere every 24 hours. And the amount is increasing every single day. Penalizing pollution instead of penalizing employment will reduce that pollution. When we place a more accurate value on the consequences of the choices we make, our choices get better. At present, when business has to pay more taxes in order to hire more people, it is discouraged from hiring more people. And if we change that and discourage them from creating more pollution, they will reduce their pollution. Our market economy, in other words, can be our most powerful ally in helping us solve this problem if we send it the right signals and tell ourselves the truth about the economic impact of the pollution that we are presently ignoring in the market. Many of our leading businesses are already making dramatic changes to reduce their global warming pollution. General Electric, DuPont, Synergy, Caterpillar, Walmart are among the many who are providing leadership for the business community in helping us devise a solution for this crisis. Leaders among unions, particularly I would single out the steelworkers, have also added momentum to this growing movement. Hunters and fishermen are now adding their voices to a call for a solution to the crisis. In a recent poll, 86% of licensed hunters and anglers said that we have a moral obligation to stop global warming to protect our children's future. And young people, as they did in my native South during the Civil Rights Revolution and all over this country, young people are beginning to confront their parents and elders with insistent questions about the morality of not moving swiftly to make these needed changes. When enough of them ask those questions, we will change. Moreover, the American religious community, including that group of conservative evangelicals, and especially the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, has made an extraordinary contribution to this entire enterprise. To the insights of science and technology, it has added the perspectives of faith and values, of prophetic imagination, spiritual motivation, and moral passion, without which all of our plans, no matter how reasonable, simply would not prevail. Individual faith groups have offered their own distinctive views. And yet, uniquely in religious life at this moment, and even historically, they have established common ground and common resolve across tenacious differences. In addition to reaching millions of people in the pews, they have demonstrated the real possibility of what we all now need to accomplish, to be ourselves together, and how to discover in this process a sense of vivid living spirit and purpose that elevates the entire human enterprise. Individual Americans of all ages are becoming part of a movement, beginning with small changes, asking what they can do as individuals, as consumers, and as citizens and voters. Many have decided to take that approach known as zero carbon. They are reducing their CO2 and then offsetting the rest with reductions elsewhere, including by the planting of trees. At least one entire community, Ballard, Washington, a city of 18,000 people, has embraced as a goal the making of the entire community zero carbon. Ultimately, this is not a political issue. It is a moral issue, it is an ethical issue, it is a spiritual issue. It affects the survival of human civilization. It affects the habitability of our only planetary home. It is not a question of left versus right, but a question of right versus wrong. Put simply, it is wrong to destroy the environment of our planet and ruin the prospects of every generation that follows ours. What is motivating millions of Americans to think differently now about this complex question of solutions to the climate crisis is the growing realization that this challenge really is bringing us not only danger, but unprecedented opportunity. I have spoken before about the way the Chinese express the concept of crisis with two symbols, the first of which in isolation means danger, and the second in isolation means opportunity. Put them together and they make up the concept crisis. Our single word conveys the danger but seldom communicates the presence of opportunity existing in every crisis. In this case, the opportunity presented by the climate crisis is not only a chance for new and better jobs, new technologies, new opportunities for profit and a higher quality of life. It does give us an opportunity for those things, but it gives us something far greater. A chance to experience something that few generations ever have the privilege of knowing, a common moral purpose, compelling enough to lift us above our limitations and motivate us to set aside more of the bickering to which we as human beings are naturally vulnerable. America's so-called greatest generation found such a purpose when they confronted fascism and won a war in Europe and the Pacific simultaneously. In the process of achieving their historic victory, they found that they had gained new moral authority and new capacity for vision. And so they created the Marshall Plan and lifted their recently defeated adversaries from their knees, assisting them to a future of dignity and self-determination. They created the United Nations and the other global institutions that made possible decades of prosperity, progress, and relative peace. In recent years, we have squandered too much of that moral authority, and it is now high time to renew it by taking on the highest challenge of our generation. In rising to meet this challenge of the climate crisis, we too will find self-renewal and transcendence and a new capacity for vision to see other crises in our time that cry out for solutions. 20 million HIV/AIDS orphans in Africa alone, civil wars fought by children, genocides and famines, the rape and pillage of our oceans and forests, an extinction crisis that threatens the web of life, tens of millions of our fellow humans dying every year from easily preventable diseases. By rising to meet the climate crisis, we will find the vision and moral authority to see these other challenges not as political problems, but as moral imperatives. This is our time to be the next greatest generation, not the selfish and self-destructive generation. This is our time for bipartisanship, transcendence, an opportunity to find our better selves, and in rising, create a better and brighter future worthy of the generations who come after us and who have a right to be able to depend on us. Thank you.
Thank you. You are listening to Al Gore's speech, Solving the Climate Crisis, given at the NSU School of Law, September 18, 2006.